Welcome, everybody, to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and it is a pleasure to be chatting with you today. I hope everyone is doing well, and if you've been tuned into the PFW podcast, as promised, I said we were going to turn the page to draft-heavy content as we near the 1st of April. Still a couple days away, but we've decided to kind of switch gears with free agency slowing down and the draft hype picking up. So today I am pleased to be joined by Yahoo Shutdown Corner writer Eric Edholm. He will be coming on with us shortly. We'll also bring in my co-host Nate Atkins and talk a little bit about the spinning quarterback carousel. Nate Atkins, of course, is from Cleveland, and I'm sure we'll have some thoughts on Robert Griffin III's arrival last week. So we are excited that you have decided to join us, and we are going to dive right into some draft coverage with, as I mentioned, Yahoo Shutdown Corner writer Eric Edholm, also a former longtime Pro Football Weekly writer. Eric, it's not LCD Sound System, but it is good to have the band back together for a couple minutes here. How you doing?
Reunions are always fun, man. Gets the nostalgia cranked up. Thanks for having me, man.
Of course, yeah. It's all our pleasure, and I'm sure you are crazy busy as we do head into the busy time with the draft, of course. So how is your draft coverage, your draft evaluations coming along? You having fun yet?
Yeah. I get to this point every year, and I think, you know, what am I missing? What do I need to double back on? And so I'm in kind of that cross-checking mode at this point, trying to at least get my eyes on as many top 100 players as possible. I'll be at Notre Dame's Pro Day this week. We're doing a two-round mock draft for Friday. We've got our top 50 series counting down. We're into the 30s now. So it's busy, but it's good. I feel like I've got a decent handle on what's going on right now.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it, and I have been really enjoying the top 50 countdown. Great stuff over there. We want our listeners, again, to head over to Yahoo Shutdown Corner and check out all Eric's coverage. Eric, I figure in light of the Ole Miss Pro Day on Monday, that's probably a decent place to start. I'm convinced the Titans are going Laremy Tunsil at number one. We'll see what you think about that. But beyond that, if they're hoping for maybe a decade of Tunsil as a perennial Pro Bowler, how many times over that 10-year span, the Titans or whoever he ends up winding up with, how many times is he going to be asked to run 40 yards on a football field?
Yeah, hopefully not very much. The only time I can remember in the last probably 4 or 5 years I've been doing this, actually seeing an offensive tackle run 40 yards in a straight line was the kid Cleveland drafted and put a guard. I'm just blanking on his name right now. And Petonio? Chasing down a – who was that? Yeah, Joel Petonio. Yep. That's what it was. Chasing down somebody – one of his teammates had fumbled, and he tackled the guy from behind. So I gave him big props for that, but you're right. Offensive tackles don't usually need to run. But, you know, the Titans did send their whole contingent to both Florida State and Ole Miss. I think they're still in that process of splitting hairs and deciding, is it Jalen Ramsey? Is it Laremy Tunsil? Do we have a trade offer to move down and not too far down?
Right.
Where we can get a good player. So I think that's kind of where they're at right now, and then everything trickles down from there.
I had a guy say to me this week that just in terms of the safest pick for the new general manager there in Tennessee, Laremy Tunsil makes a ton of sense. He does look like a can't-miss prospect. As I mentioned, there's been there was some talk yesterday because it appears Tunsil's not going to run a 40-yard dash, but he, of course, wowed in all the other tests at his pro day and continues his strong momentum from the combine. So Tunsil's certainly looking good. I was going to say, are people maybe just bummed if they don't see Tunsil run because they won't know if possibly he's faster than Laquon Treadwell?
That's a good question, right, Mr. 4.63 or whatever. But, you know, I will say this. I do feel like, you know, the idea that elite left tackles are can't miss or they're, you know, high floor prospects in all cases. I mean, really, other than Tyron Smith in the last, you know, 5-6 years, there haven't been a lot of great offensive tackles taken in the top 10. So it's been a little bit of a misposition for evaluations. Now, Tunsil looks great. I love the fact that he's suspended for as many games as he was. He steps in and shuts down Myles Garrett his first game. I mean, that just, you know, we're talking about a future top five pick of Von Miller-type pass rusher for next year. So that was an indication that he kept himself in shape. He was an elite athlete. You know, I've heard the comparisons to Tyron, to DeBrickashaw Ferguson, people like that. And I think they're pretty valid. I mean, you watch him and other than the Auburn game, he had about as clean a season as you can watch. And you know, Auburn had Shaq Lawson, so it's no joke right there.
Right, that's a good point. And I'm glad you did mention, because if you look in the recent history of these top 10 tackles, like Eric said, you've got Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, mm-hmm. Matt Khalil. It's a great point, because it did seem to be a handful of years ago like it was a little bit safer. But I'm glad you mentioned that. We'll have to wait and see on Laramie Tunsil, of course. You know, I was mostly joking about Laquan Treadwell. I know some teams are going to be concerned. The 4.63, the 4.65. No one thought he was going to run all that much faster. Everyone saw on tape that the speed isn't really his game. But what are your thoughts on that? Is that more an opportunity maybe for teams, or is it more a red flag? Does it depend on the team? And where do you have Treadwell evaluated? Are you worried about the stopwatch time?
Yeah, you know, it's a legitimate question. I wrote about it yesterday and tried to be, you know, as fair on it as possible. You know, not every slow running receiver is Anquan Boldin. Not every fast running receiver is, you know, Odell Beckham. I mean, so you have to sort of sit there and say, all right, he did lose 8 pounds. He did opt not to run at the combine, has been supposedly just training for the 40, and he ran about what we would have expected him to run 8 pounds heavier. So that is a little bit of a worry. But you watch him play and you see Dez Bryant. You see that kind of like angry, aggressive, strong, fierce, and a guy who gets open too. I mean, that's right. What's most important. So, you know, the tape doesn't lie with him. He definitely has that kind of separation ability in other ways. But, you know, maybe he's more of a Michael Crabtree type receiver than he is a down the field kind of guy, even though he ran a lot of, you know, seven routes and over routes and stuff like that in college. So I don't know. I'm fascinated. I hope he doesn't fall that far, because I think he's a really good football player. If he falls, it may be for other things, like, you know, that leg injury was pretty devastating, or character questions, other reasons he might slide in the draft.
Yeah, we know, and we're chatting with Eric at Home here of Yahoo Shutdown Corner, an excellent follow on Twitter at Eric_at home, and you'll want to make sure you're reading all his stuff for the lead up to the draft, and frankly, all throughout the year. A lot of great creative stories coming from Yahoo and Eric. Laquan Treadwell, of course, had the devastating leg injury, did come back and played very, very well last year. There are some potential off-field questions. He's a very confident kid. We all know how he feels he stacks up against the other wide receivers in this draft. I can't remember if you did say, do you have him at the top of your board? He is at the top of ours in terms of the wide receiver class.
Yeah, I've got him, a couple of those guys really stacked close. I'm actually pulling up my list as I talk to you here. I've got Treadwell as my top receiver. Okay. I've got Josh Doctson pretty close behind, Corey Coleman right after that. I'm not as big a Will Fuller guy as some other guys, but that speed is undeniable, and he'll be a weapon for whatever team he ends up on. So I've got a little bit of separation there at that point, but those top three guys are all pretty close in the 20s overall, sort of late teens to early 20s.
Okay, and as Eric mentioned, he will be at the Notre Dame Pro Day this week checking out Will Fuller. Obviously, the hands are the big question there. You wonder, no one wonders about the speed, of course, but is this a kind of another Ted Ginn in the making, a true mm-hmm. boomer bust type of wide receiver? We'll have to wait and see. I do want to talk about some kids that didn't go to Ole Miss, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the very, very, you know, the controversial prospect. I don't know how else to say it. Robert Nkendiche. What are you hearing on him? Has he done anything to hurt or help himself since what was, I'm sure we can agree, a very, very awkward appearance at the combine in front of the media?
Yeah, I don't think he liked my question. I don't think he liked a lot of questions he was asked that day. He started out strong and then kind of faded quickly. And again, I don't know how much teams, you know, put stock-wise into what he says to the media, but you'd have to assume that those kinds of things are happening behind closed doors as well. And, you know, I heard from one college scouting director who said, I just don't know if you can trust him. But the talent is undeniable. I mean, he really finally played like that elite prospect coming out. I mean, we were talking about a kid since the beginning of his junior year in high school who was, you know, roundly known as one of the most talented pound-for-pound athletes and football players in the country. So he finally, I thought, put it, you know, all together this past season. Did get a little banged up at the end of the year, but really was great. I know the production sort of doesn't look all that eye-popping, but you saw those kind of wild plays and you thought, man, this kid could really, really be special. He's got length, he's got strength, he's got quickness. You know, he could play as a power end, he could play as an inside penetrator. He fits every defensive scheme, I think. Other people say he's more of a fit in a 4-3, but yeah, the interview questions are there. And I like the fact that he and his brother Denzel are kind of splitting up a little bit. He said yesterday that after his pro day that, you know, we need to give each other a little space here. And that's good. But Denzel has been such a big influence on his life. And I don't know that they're going to be separated for very long, you know. And I think NFL teams would tell you that this is Robert Kim DJ, who has more to lose,
right,
is a good kid who is maybe led astray by Denzel a little bit.
Okay, interesting. I was going to say, if I'm Laramie Tunzel's representation, I may want them separating a little bit too with Robert Kim DJ, the way he kind of threw his teammate under the bus a little bit regarding that hotel incident that occurred last year. But
yeah,
it sounds
and
like...
I can tell you, his agent basically said, you know, it's bonk what he said. Laramie Tunsil was at the party that night, didn't stay for the remainder of the event, came back when the cops had arrived and said, forget this, I'm out of here. So that's their story. I don't know how much it's been printed or whatever, but I can tell you that, you know, from Tunsil's side, they've had to tell teams, hey, look, we were there at one point during the evening. We weren't there when all this craziness went down. We just weren't a part of it, and nobody from Kim DJ's side of things has denied it. So that's the other half of the picture.
Okay, good stuff there from Eric. And just in case our listeners don't know, a little bit of context, Kim DJ, of course, was arrested for the marijuana possession after his accident in the hotel room last December at the Combine. He offered up willingly that Laramie Tunsil was also in the room and that no one else was willing to fess up. He said he wasn't smoking pot but was arrested for it. So it was kind of bizarre, but it's now in the rearview mirror, and we'll just have to wait and see how the process plays out. Spending a couple more minutes here with Eric Edholm of Yahoo Shutdown Corner. You can read him at Yahoo. You can see him at 120 Sports. You can marvel at the father of 1-year-old twins. Eric is really doing it all, and he's nice enough to join us for a couple minutes. We have to talk quarterbacks because that's what everyone wants to talk about, not just the Browns and the 49ers, a handful of other teams. What do you think about this quarterback class? Who do you have at the top of it? Maybe how does it compare to some recent years?
Yeah, I think if you look at last year when there were seven QBs drafted, we had the 1-2 picks. You know, we had Winston and Mariota go first and second, and then there was that big drop off. We didn't see another one go until the 75th pick. So, you know, this is a different year. I think we'll see maybe five or six go in the first 75 picks, and way more than seven in the entire draft. So, I think this is a much deeper group. But I don't know that you can definitively say that Carson Wentz with 23 starts at FCS at North Dakota State with a great system there, and the backup played, you know, the production seemed just as good with the backup in there as it did with Wentz in there, or Jared Goff, who, you know, has a good amount of turnovers in his career, compensated for a bad defense, but certainly wasn't exceptional. He was very, very good, but you know, you can't say right now that they're better than Winston or Mariota. So I think that the middle and the upper middle class is a lot better than last year. But, I would say there's a better chance for teams to find, you know, we could see a Dak Prescott or a Connor Cook or Paxton Lynch or one of these guys end up being very good in time. So I think there's at least the chance that there's a third or a fourth starter from this group, whereas last year kind of looks like a two-quarterback class. So it's a little stronger depth-wise.
And his one interesting name, certainly both the guys you just mentioned in Prescott and Lynch, very entertaining, athletic kids who did a lot of really impressive things in college. But it does seem like with Lynch, perhaps his draft stock has cooled just a tad bit. We initially had him ranked as our number one quarterback in our draft guide, I think, based mostly on upside. But how do you think teams are viewing Lynch, and do you think he's fallen just a little bit at this point?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I think it's funny because the last taste we had in our mouth was that disastrous Auburn game. And then, you know, he was just sort of okay at the combine throwing session. His pro day is until April 6th. So, you know, like you said, there hasn't been that. The medicals came back a little funny on him. They had to kind of cross check a little on, his shoulder and his knees and stuff. I think the more you dig into him, the more you see a prospect that, and I wasn't sure what to make of him at first, but I like him. As long as you're not making him anything but a three his first year. Mm-hmm. And then his second year, okay, let's think of him as a backup or somebody who could compete for a job. And by the third year, you know, when you have to decide if you're a first-round pick, okay, we got to pick up the fifth-year option, then you have an idea of what he can be. He, I mean, some people are actually turned off by his height. He's 6'7". You don't see a lot of quarterbacks outside of Brock Osweiler that height, but yeah. his arm talent is ridiculous. He made some crazy throws this year, and he's a great athlete. And I think he's got the right temperament for the job. So I've warmed up to him. I don't know what NFL teams think largely. I do know a couple teams that really haven't changed their grade much based on the last couple of months. So I still think he's going to go late round one. I think there'll be a trade or something will happen. Maybe the Broncos, somebody else. I think he'll go in that late 20s to sort of early 30s range.
Okay, and the Broncos are a team that a lot have mentioned, obviously needing a quarterback, but yeah. Not necessarily falling in line with what you just said, where you have to wait a couple years unless you're dependent on Mark Sanchez. So that could be kind of an interesting pairing
yeah,
there.
I trust John Elway. I don't want to sound like a campaign slogan, but I mean, like I think they're going to find a solution. I have a feeling it's not going to be Lynch. I think it's going to be somebody else. I have a couple names in the back of my head, whether it's Prescott or Hackenberg, one of those two guys. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to find a solution. And I don't know that Mark Sanchez is going to be their starter. I have a feeling they're going to have somebody else in the mix, too, who could compete for that job.
Talking with Eric Edholm of Yahoo Shutdown Corner. Eric, just on the way out, I was kind of perusing your Twitter, always a lot of fun stuff on there. And yesterday you had a tweet mentioning maybe number 13, number 14, where the Dolphins and the Raiders are drafting is where things could get a little crazy. It seems like there's that point every year where things can potentially go haywire. Can you just kind of expound on that just a little bit and what you potentially see happening there?
Yeah, mainly because I was going crazy in my mock draft trying to figure out who they might pick. And just to make it clear, I mean, I have great respect for what the Raiders have done the last 2-3 years in the draft. They've done a tremendous job, maybe better than almost anybody. So, hats off to Reggie McKenzie. They've built this team back up through the draft, first, second, third round picks. They've nailed most of them. They have a core in place. Everyone's excited. This year, I don't know that there's that one perfect fit. I keep coming back to, Reggie Ragland or somebody like that. But, that's a team that took, Rolando McClain a few years ago in that same range and right. Got burned by it. I don't know. Does that enter their thinking at all? So, and then the Dolphins, they moved back. They were at 14, excuse me, the Dolphins at 13. Right. So they moved back from the 8th pick, and I can't figure out why they did it.
Out on Zeke Elliott, maybe? That's what right. Seems like it could happen, right?
And, now they're looking at Arian Foster and broken down backs. I'm just having a hard time figuring out what their thinking was. I guess, you just sort of say, hey, best player available. We might be able to get lucky and somebody slides out of that top 10 group there. And I don't know. I'm not able to figure out exactly who fits there. And I don't think Vernon Hargraves gets all the way to number 13.
Well, thanks for validating some of my feelings this offseason on the Dolphins. I don't know what the heck is going on there, and it's a shame because I think Adam Gase is a talented guy, and I'm not sure he's being set up initially for great success, but we'll see. Eric, for real on the way out, we talked a lot of draft. We appreciate your time. Maybe one offseason, I'm guessing it's not the Dolphins, but one offseason just through free agency that you really like a lot, that you have up near the top of the list that is positioned, a team that's positioned itself well entering the draft.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's, these teams that make a lot of moves, like the Oakland Raiders, and they've been active. And Bruce Irvin didn't wow me, and there have been a couple other moves but they seem to do pretty well for themselves. And really the Kansas City Chiefs, too. I know they lost Sean Smith to those Raiders, but, they were able to keep some of these guys at pretty good prices. I know Justin Houston's had the injury, and he's a big concern, but they kept Holly. I always sort of trust their draft process a little bit. Mm-hmm. You think about some of the lower end, Mitchell Schwartz free agency. Boy, getting him for under $7 million a year, I think was great. So, and then the late flourish by the Patriots has been impressive. I didn't know what they would be able to do this offseason. They look like they're ready to go compete for a title. So it's not always the teams that make the most moves or the biggest, the Giants or whoever.
Of course.
Sometimes it's the next layer that can impress you the most.
Eric, awesome stuff. I know how busy you are. We are going to let you run, but we truly appreciate your time. Once again, Eric Edholm, Yahoo Shutdown Corner. Find him on Twitter, @Eric_Edholm. Eric, let's do it again. We had a ton of fun. Thank you for your time.
All right, brother, man. Good talking to you. We'll talk to you real soon.
Have a good one. That was Mr. Edholm. As I mentioned, longtime Pro Football Weekly writer at Yahoo Shutdown Corner, and really one of the more creative and knowledgeable NFL writers out there, so you're going to want to go check him out. That was a lot of fun getting to chat draft. We are going to turn the page and talk a little bit about what's going on still in free agency when we get back. We'll bring in Nate Atkins, talk a little RG3 quarterback carousel. That and more when we return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. That was some Umphrey's McGee out of order, bringing you in and out of our breaks. You know that already. You've been listening to the Chicago Football Podcast, the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Umphrey's McGee, local Chicago band and friends of the program. So you're probably going to want to go check them out if you like what you've heard. Right now, it is my pleasure to bring in my partner in crime, Nate Atkins. Nate, how is it going today?
It's going great. Glad to be back in this wonderful studio for another podcast, another week.
Yeah, this is a lovely little quaint setup we have here, and always fun to be able to be chatting football, of course, and call it work. That's what we get to do, so very fortunate. And Nate, I wanted to discuss with you, we're not going to talk about the Cleveland Browns every week on this show, I promise, but they've been nothing if not interesting. For the better part of March, I think it was not necessarily a good kind of interesting, but they made some waves. They made some major waves last week, of course, in the Robert Griffin III acquisition. Nate is from Cleveland. Nate is a diehard Browns fan, but of course he's going to talk objectively on this right now. Is the quarterback position solved for the Browns? Can we build RG3's bust and get him back on redemption road here?
Not at all. But you know, it's a gamble for them that makes a little bit of sense here, at least. Right. You know, you got a player and a team here who are both desperate, and I know that's how Art Briles described the situation, right. And that's exactly how it looks right now. And it just seems like a good marriage in that sense—a quarterback who feels like he needs a fresh start with a coach who can really hold him accountable and sort of reteach all these fundamentals and things he didn't even get to try in the field last year as he sat out behind Kirk Cousins. And you have a team that's just starred for quarterback play of any kind of spark. And so they've signed him right now to a sort of bridge contract at 2 years and $15 million with an opportunity to opt out in year two. And it kind of sets it up nicely to where they can still draft a quarterback at number two if they want. They have a couple different options there, which guy impresses them. If RG3 flames out, well, then they've got a little bit of time to develop another guy. They at least can say they tried it at a cheap rate and it didn't work. And, of course, if it does work out, then they finally have a quarterback, and they also have a high draft pick that they've groomed a little bit that they can trade. So I have not been a big fan of their offseason so far, but I thought that move did make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I think you you raise several interesting points there. He got kind of a, you know, the contract could be perceived as a bridge quarterback deal, but at the same time, there's enough money in there in year one to where you have to think they'd love for him to latch onto that job and be the starter. Now, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't exclude me, at least my thinking, in that the Browns definitely at either number two or whatever it would be, number 33, they're drafting a quarterback. I think it's going to be Carson Wentz at number two. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's not a bad situation to learn. I don't know if you want to say learn behind a guy like RG3 so much, but just maybe not have that instant pressure like a lot of these, you know, highly drafted quarterbacks feel.
Yeah, and it's also good to have talented young quarterbacks compete against each other. Absolutely. I think one of the problems in this league is you bring in quarterbacks and they're rookies and they already have the job and it's theirs and they're gone. And you see competition has helped other guys develop in this league. It really, I think it did wonders for Kirk Cousins to come in and have that pressure with RG3. And over time, they sort of figured him out. And Jay Gruden got a system that works perfectly to his skill set, but it took a little bit of time. You saw it when the Seahawks went and spent a lot of money on Matt Flynn. They also spent a third-round pick on Russell Wilson. And all of a sudden, Russell Wilson comes in with this fire to beat out the guy they spent money on, and he ends up getting that starting nod. And so I think it's going to be crucial because I personally, I don't think Carson Wentz or Jared Goff is worth the number two pick or even close to that. I think they're both talented quarterbacks, but this is a league that overdrafts guys, and I think both of them are more developmental types. And so that's why this situation could work, because if they come in RG3, I think he should be the starter day one if he's healthy, which is a big if always. But If he is, I think he should be the starter no matter who they draft, because I don't see anyone that they could draft who's more NFL ready to step in right now. And of course, they also have a month to work with him before any new quarterback comes in. And so they've got some options. I do agree. I'm sure they will go quarterback with one of those first two picks. I kind of would prefer them to go someone more like Dak Prescott, third or fourth round. It's a guy I'm very high on, but I would totally understand if they took Carson Wentz or Jared Goff and they wanted to just develop them and see who works out.
I think, you know, part of the key is feeling like you have someone who's able to develop him. Obviously, we talked a little bit about Hugh Jackson. Everything I've been hearing is that this can work because Hugh Jackson will hold him accountable, and Nate mentioned that as well. Art Briles mentioned that, who should know RG3 as well as anyone. He said it's all about the relationship. If he trusts you, if he respects you, he's going to work for you. Art Briles has the feeling that that's how RG3 is going to respond to Hugh Jackson, so it will be fascinating. Last one on the topic, and I just want to ask you about a couple other vacant quarterback spots and what might become of them. If RG3 is to recapture, I don't even want to say recapture his rookie of the year greatness, but let's just say resume being an above average functional NFL starter, is it because Hugh Jackson builds the offense around him to where RG3 is still using his legs, or is it because he manages to, for the first time in his life, become a true pocket passer who can go through his progressions and not get skittish inside the pocket?
Probably a mix of the two. This is probably the fairest way to go about it. I mean, he's just – it didn't work when they tried to put him as a true pocket passer who had all this anticipation and made all these reads at the line.
Right.
And it just sacrifices so much of his ability as a runner. At the same time, it's obviously – in the AFC – in the brutal AFC North behind an offensive line that just lost two starters that gave up the second most sacks last year, he's going to get killed if he plays the same way that he used to. And so there's got to be a balance there. From what I've heard from people who've covered Washington is that as much as we think that RG3's problem was taking all these hits as a runner, what also really was a big deal for him was he just didn't throw the ball quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he waited till guys were so open, because at Baylor they get so open.
Right.
And so that's what's going to have to change, is he can play similar to how he used to play, but he's got to be able to throw guys open. He's got to be able to thread tight windows, and he's got to be able to pull that trigger quickly, either take off and run or throw, not just stand there and take hits, because it obviously is not going to hold up that way.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point. I would say I still think that there are quarterbacks who are successful without actually throwing guys open, because there are anticipatory throwers and guys that aren't, you know, that their game doesn't fully revolve around that. But I do agree he's going to have to improve, you know, immensely to have a shot. So it's going to be very interesting to see what becomes of the Browns situation with RG3. Nate, just quickly, a couple other, you know, pretty high-profile quarterback vacancies that are still out there. The Jets and the Broncos, I think, are the two that you know, immediately come to mind. And, hey, I guess the Rams, they're in Los Angeles now. Their profile has, you know, risen naturally. We have to throw them in there as well. But let's start with the Broncos. They're the, you know, defending Super Bowl champions. Obviously, they have the Hall of Fame, former quarterback and decision maker. Do you believe that the Broncos could go into week one with Mark Sanchez? Do you think that, you know, John Elway has a trick up his sleeve? What do you think happens there? And is the Colin Kaepernick, you know, rumors or rumblings that the Broncos could be interested, do you think that's still on the table?
It's interesting to watch the Broncos here. You're starting to learn, even though they're run by one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, that they just are a little patient with investing too much in a quarterback, the way that they kind of let Brock Osweiler leave, and they're not anting up to Colin Kaepernick yet. I think they set the bar to fourth-round pick, and report comes out that Kaepernick's not going to be traded unless they're blown away with an offer. And, and I wouldn't be surprised if Elway says, I'm not going to offer, you know, and so – at the same time, I'd be surprised to see them roll with Mark Sanchez. I think that at the very least, a guy like Elway is going to want to develop his own guy, and I just would be surprised if he sees Sanchez as this bridge to the future kind of quarterback. And so it's what their options are, I'm not sure, because they're in a weird spot in the draft to get one of these quarterbacks. So maybe they trade up. You know, this is a team that's on the verge of, you know, they just won the Super Bowl, so they should contend again. So that's one of those teams that might use some of those later picks to move up. It'll be interesting to see, but I'd be surprised if Mark Sanchez is there. I don't know how you feel about that.
We should mention the Broncos will have some draft ammunition if they do elect to move up. They've got some compensatory picks to work with, and I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't – Mark Sanchez kind of is what he is at this point, but that Broncos defense also is what it is. And we saw they were able to win a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning doing very little. So I just wonder if the structure's in place. At least I think it's a situation where Elway can kind of have peace of mind knowing that he has that defense and that running game. He just invested in C.J. Anderson, maybe take some pressure off Sanchez if that is the direction they have to go.
Yeah, it's just that was a defense with Malik Jackson and Danny Trevathan.
Yeah,
and they're still going to be great, but it's just there's such a small window for error when you're playing that kind of defense. Or at least that's the style they had that won that Super Bowl. That's one of the best defenses I've ever seen. And so expecting that to be your formula every year and just punt the quarterback position. It worked last year, but it just seems a little riskier this year, especially with the guys that they lost.
This terrific point by you. The part of what made that defense so good was the ability to bring pressure in waves from everywhere. Von Miller may be the best defender on the planet, not named J.J. Watt. DeMarcus Ware is going to be a Hall of Famer, but part of what made them so great was that interior pressure, of course, with Jackson and Wolf. So will be fun to watch. I feel like everyone's talking about the escape of Brock Osweiler and you know, some of these other guys, maybe not as much about the defenders. A couple other names potentially that are out there. Mike Glennon, I know some people like even better than Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we'll get to as well. Mike Glennon only has, what I think, 15 career starts. And some pretty decent numbers. He's only 26 years old, has plenty of size and enough athleticism. So what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would be looking for in a trade, I'm not sure. But Mike Glennon is definitely one more name to keep an eye on. And then, of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick threw 31 touchdowns last year. I believe he's going to be 33 or 34 when this season starts. So as a personnel guy put it to me this week, what did he say? Fitzpatrick is just good enough to break your heart. Obviously, that's what he did in Week 17 last year. Mm-hmm. I know that's what the Jets general manager is kind of thinking with Fitzpatrick. But is that one of those situations where that would be the best situation for him just to return to New York? Or do you think there is a possibility he could get away to maybe Denver or Los Angeles or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's a Harvard guy, so I understand he's trying to bank on his one career year there at age 34 before it's gone.
Yep.
Team-wise, I mean, New York is a fantastic situation. That's sort of a big reason why he had his career years, surrounded guys like Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, and now he's got Matt Forte. Pretty decent offensive line there. And so I think he would, as far as coming back and putting up numbers and having a chance to win, I think New York has got to appeal to him at the same time. This is a guy who's trying to test the market and see all what he can get, and it's kind of why they're at a standstill right now. But, I mean, if you're him, do you take more money potentially and go to somewhere like St. Louis where you've got a potentially good running game, but there's the receivers around you just aren't anywhere near the same thing? It's going to be interesting to see kind of what the ballparks are there. But I think a lot of people are just kind of expecting the Kings to get worked out between him and New York right now.
I think what makes this so unusual and also fascinating is here we are almost at April 1st and you've got a couple teams, arguably three teams with playoff caliber defenses who just could not be less settled at the quarterback position. So it certainly makes for a lot of intrigue. We talked about the Rams a little bit, but who knows what the Rams are going to do. They like Case Keenum. He's their guy. So who knows? The point is stay tuned.
No one ever knows.
Yeah. You know, stay tuned. There is a lot still to be decided. That's going to do it for us today on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We had a ton of fun, as we do every week, talking draft and free agency, and we'll have lots of good stuff up our sleeves. We're going to get Greg Gabriel back here in the coming weeks to give us some updated scouting reports and continue breaking down this draft like no one else is able to. Nate and I will be back next week, I'm sure. Nate, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Eric Edholm, Yahoo Shutdown Corner, also appreciate him being on the show. I am Arthur Arkish, and thanks the most to you for listening to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We'll talk to you again very soon. We'll